far.
Welcome to Aphon Kiss, written and read by Alice Dale. Previously, Craig met Daisy for the first time at the Locarno Ballroom. All went well, until she suggested that being shot down over the English Channel must have been exciting, and the memory brought back Craig's stutter. Added to that, Daisy dancing with an American soldier offended Craig, and he was about to leave without her.
Offended by Daisy's dancing with an American soldier, Craig was about to leave the Locarno, but Kevin grabbed his sleeve and pulled him back. "Don't be daft. These boys don't have girlfriends here, and some of them won't have seen a girl for months. They are our allies. We're supposed to make them feel at home." "Look over there," he said, pointing. "Daisy's smiling and waving to you." But Craig returned a smile, stony-faced. Christine noticed this and jumped up, pushed through the dancers and tapped Daisy's partner on the shoulder. The tall American turned round, surprised. Daisy shrieked with laughter and slapped Christine playfully on her arm, then made her way back to their table.
"That young seed's big enough without having two lasses wanting to dance with him. Is that my drink? Oh, thanks,"
she said, grinning up at Craig as she sat down and gulped mouthful.
"Did you see his face?"
Craig realised this cheeky girl was full of fun and meant no harm. He was stunned, but I think he was flattered, he answered.
"But I didn't get time to wheedle a pair of islands out of him. Well, kill her if she gets a pair. Oh, I feel sorry for them. All these guys so far from home and no idea if they'll ever get back there."
Which brought memories of Buckland Hospital flooding back as Craig remembered how many of them had harboured that very thought. Throwing off that memory, Craig replied, "Well, you're a wee devil, Daisy Thompson, dancing with a Yank the minute my back was turned," as he slipped his arm along her shoulders and gave her a little squeeze. Walking to the stop for Daisy's tram car, she took Craig's arm and snuggled closely to him. Very casually, she asked,
"Did you have a girlfriend when you were in the RAF? You'd have been a real catch being a flight lieutenant."
"Not lieutenant, flight lieutenant, lieutenant," he repeated.
"Okay, lieutenant. Did the lieutenant have a girlfriend?"
His teasing face dropped as he answered, "Sort of." Another pause. "But it didn't work out. Oh, look, here's your white tram. Mine's a green one." He gave her a hand to board and waved her off, grateful that that particular conversation hadn't gone any further. It made him realise that in spite of all his efforts to forget Pamela, including his refusal to open her letters, it still hurt even to talk about her, especially with someone so different. The foursomes continued every week on the two-for-one Fridays, and occasionally they went to the pictures instead. Craig enjoyed Daisy's company. They hadn't much in common, but she was always cheerful and had a real Glaswegian sense of humour, something he had missed in the RAF living in the South. And she didn't seem to notice his disfigurements. Bright enough to know their cause, she never asked for any more details, and he was truly grateful for that. He hated reliving that ghastly day and all that had followed, except for Pam, of course. But that subject was just as painful. Pippa was delighted about the foursomes and the change it had made in Craig. His self-confidence had returned and his mood swings had gone. Obviously, this Daisy must have had a lot to do with it, and she was dying to meet her. It also bolstered her own confidence, and she felt sure that soon she could tell Craig the truth about her friendship with David. Every Friday, when Craig came home happy, she intended telling him, but she'd never had the courage. The outings with David were what she looked forward to all week, secure in the knowledge their friendship was totally innocent. The kiss that had happened in his office was only because she had been so upset, and it had never been repeated. She almost wished it had, but she instinctively knew that David was afraid to compromise their relationship. He never went further than holding her hand in the cinema and giving her a brotherly kiss on the cheek when he left her on her doorstep. Even these small gestures gave her a girlish thrill. Then one wet Friday, they went to the pictures as usual, and when they came out, the rain was bouncing off the pavement. David had brought an umbrella, which had been a bit of a nuisance in the cinema, but they were glad of it as they rushed to the bus and again when they got off, as it was some distance to Pippa's council house. Although it meant quite a walk back home for David, he always saw her safely home, never allowing her to walk alone in the blackout. When they reached her door, dry on the upper half, but soaking wet on their legs, Pippa took pity on him. For the first time, she invited him in. "Come on in and stand by the fire, and I'll make us a cup of tea." He hesitated for a moment. "Come on, you're worse off than me. I can dry my legs with a towel, but your trousers will need a fire to dry them." She looked down as she spoke and saw the browning running in rivers down her legs. "Oh, my God, will you look at my legs?"
"With pleasure. They're very nice legs."
"Not with my fake stockings running to mud. I'll soon wash that off, but your trousers will take more time to dry," she said, leading the way. He closed the door behind them and stood in the hall with his dripping umbrella. "Here, give that to me." She shot it open and raindrops cascaded through the air in an arc, making David jump out of the way. She propped it open on the hall floor and said, "That's the sitting room on your right. You put on the electric fire and I'll put on the kettle." As she turned left into the kitchen, David was glad to stand in front of the immediate heat while looking round the friendly room with its grey carpet, wine-coloured three-piece suite and matching curtains. The glass-fronted cabinet displayed china and silver, inherited from an older generation. He turned to the mantelpiece and started studying the photographs and came face to face with Craig. David lifted the photo to have a closer look. Just then, Pippa came back, carrying a tray with teapot, cups and saucers and two pieces of Walker's shortbread. As she bent to place the tray on the coffee table, she started to snigger. David turned round.
"What are you laughing at?"
Putting her hand over her mouth, she giggled. You're steaming!" Following her eyeline, David looked down and saw what she meant. Steam was rising from his wet trousers, nearly reaching his hands, still holding the photo. That set him off too. When they'd stopped laughing, she said, "You're about the same size as Stan. I haven't had the heart to throw out his clothes, but they're not big enough for Craig. I should give them to charity, I suppose, with clothing so scarce. But as they say, charity begins at home. Wait there and I'll see what I can find. You pour the tea," she shouted over her shoulder as she went out the door. She was back quickly, holding out two pairs of trousers, one dark grey, the other navy blue. David felt odd about putting on her dead husband's clothes, and he hesitated to take them. "I know what you're thinking, but Stan was a great believer in waste not, want not. Come and I'll show you where the bedroom is." He didn't answer. "Come on, don't be daft. Your trousers aren't going to be dry for some time." And she disappeared with the trousers over her arm. With no choice, he followed her and found her standing in the doorway of the single bedroom he assumed was Craig's. Thank you.